Now would be the moment when I share my story of the year Christmas went horribly wrong. That time we realized too late the Christmas ham was really the neighbor's pot-bellied pig. Or the Christmas Eve I arrived so coked up I spent the next 2 days playing lightning rounds of Scattergories with myself at the kids' table. That year I went toe-to-toe with Arnold Schwarzenegger to run down the year's hottest toy. These are all fine stories, and I should tell them to you sometime. But fortunately, the people you are about to hear have lives much, much more interesting than mine. It's our first ever holiday story slam from In the Loop. And we must have done a few of these because we get applause right off the bat. People know how it works. I'm Jeff Horwich. I'm on the stage of the Lab Theater in Minneapolis. Storytellers have been signing up for the last hour or so to take on our theme for the evening. That theme, festive indigestion. To lead it off, you know, I wish I could dig into my past for stories that expose my underbelly and mortify my family. Kind of David Sedaris style, you know. But for better or for worse, and much to my parents' credit, I am just me. And to tell you the truth, most of my holiday memories are nice. Think bathrobes and coffee cake. When I do think hard for the times tension crept into my holidays, good and bad, it almost always had to do with a girl. Flying home for Christmas at 16, I was living that semester in D.C., and I had just had my first real kiss in front of the Capitol Christmas tree, covered in snow, with this Southern Belle from South Carolina. And that Christmas, it was just agony to be apart. We were on the phone every night planning our life together, and we all know that when two teenagers who've kissed one time start talking about getting married and making babies, it really is likely to happen. Freshman year of college now, going with a different girlfriend to visit her family in Indiana. Try explaining to your girlfriend's grandfather not only that you have a black eye, but that you gave it to yourself by repeatedly whacking your own face while performing a slapstick sketch back at the dorm. And that relationship didn't survive that week. At 22 now, I'm spending Christmas Day at Tokyo Disneyland with the sweetest little Japanese girl you'll ever meet. And it's beginning to dawn on me at this point that this, you know, this could be it, the rest of my life. And you don't understand it until you're in it. The vortex pulling you toward marrying a beautiful Japanese woman is one of the most powerful forces on God's earth. And if you're 22 with your whole life in front of you, you must resist it with everything that you've got. The breakup that followed 6 months later was an international incident of which I'm not terribly proud. And I'm actually a little concerned that she still thinks we're going out. By the way, my wife always hates it when I mention her at these things, so I thought this time I'd tell anecdotes about a bunch of other girls. I thought that was a good idea. Sure, this is a time of year for cheer and charity and chapstick, but it is also a time for drama, humor, conflict. Hence our theme for the evening, festive indigestion. And this year, it's not just the usual things like relationships and family time that can turn our stomachs. We've got this rotten economy that raises the temperature on the whole shebang and messes with our usual holiday autopilot. As always, we have no idea what stories are in store tonight. Our band, The Smarts, are here to improvise their way from one to the next. So let's get our first storyteller to the stage and kick off another In the Loop Story Slam. Glad to have Rick Reppy with us on the Story Slam up on stage. Rick, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be had.
It says here you spend your holidays handing out toys to children. What's your venue? Where do you do it?
Wherever they let me. It's not ever anything I plan very well, so I tend to just show up with a bag of toys, which usually starts out creeping people out. You sort of have to work your way into.
Quite literally, you just get a bag of toys and just go hit the streets.
Yeah, it started in New Orleans 3 years ago, post-Katrina. I just showed up with a bunch of toys I talked to Maquiladora in Juarez, Mexico, into giving me. Uh-huh. And went to where the Katrina refugees stayed and was Santa.
So where are you going to go this year?
I'm going to be in Dallas, so I guess I have to inflict toys upon kids in Dallas.
Have you figured out a location to
No,
to
I never
head
do
yet?
Until the day before.
It's very spontaneous. That's kind of an amazing tradition.
Well, sometimes you wander the streets for a while with a bag of toys looking a little weird, but eventually you'll find a group of kids somewhere you can hand toys to.
Well, I'm looking forward to what you have for us tonight on the Story Slam. Rick Reppy, thanks very much for being here.
So the tail end of 2005 didn't go very good for me. My marriage blew up, I went broke, and on the night of Thanksgiving, my apartment caught on fire. I'd had worse runs of luck, but they were usually accompanied by cops, handcuffs, and a visit to jail, which was kind of nice. It's how you knew the streak was over. I did what I always do when I hate my life and I want to get away from it. I took a road trip. And what I was really doing was running away from Christmas. I couldn't stand the thought of it. I felt alone. I felt completely disconnected. I have this great family. Mom, dad, two brothers. They'd take me back in a second with one phone call, but I was too embarrassed and too ashamed to make the call that year. A few days short of Christmas, I found myself in the little Mormon town of St. George, Utah, down in the southwestern corner of the state. I was sitting in a gazebo in a pretty little park just a couple of blocks away from the Mormon temple, and I was about a half step away from the meltdown that had been building up for 6 months, and I heard angels sing. It wasn't really angels. It turned out to be a bunch of Mormon Christmas carolers wandering the streets, but it seemed like angels when I first heard them. I watched them as they would gather up in front of houses, and families would come out, and they would sing to them and exchange greetings, and then they'd go down and do it another couple of houses down, and eventually they went around the corner and out of sight, and I missed them. So I followed them. They'd move, I'd move. They'd stop, I'd hang back in the shadows. I did that for about 20 minutes until I heard somebody behind me say, "What are you doing?" And I jumped like 1,000 feet in the air. His name was Raymond. He was a short, powerfully built man of Hispanic descent. He was one of the carolers. He was late getting off work, so he just walked the route he knew they would take, and he saw me following them. He also happened to be an off-duty cop. I don't care how you spin it, you cannot tell a small-town Mormon cop what it is you're doing stalking a bunch of Mormon Christmas carolers without coming across as officially creepy. But he surprised me. Instead of running me off or running me in, he invited me to join them. His wife, Linda, was the ringleader, and after 20 seconds in her presence, I found myself hoping that she had children, because somebody should be lucky enough to have this nurturing person as their mom. She put her arm through mine, shared her songbook with me, and we started singing Christmas carols. About the third house we hit, they started singing Silent Night. Now, see, that song is Christmas to me. Growing up, we would always go to the Christmas Eve candlelight service, and I'd be there with my mom and dad and my two brothers, and the service would end with the congregation standing, holding up lighted candles, and I would stand there bathed in soft candlelight and the love of my family while everybody sang that song. And the meltdown finally came. And back there in St. George, I became aware of the sound of somebody sobbing, and then I realized it was me. And the Mormons, instead of doing what they should have done, which was get weirded out and run away, they'd gathered around me, and they put their arms across my shoulders, and they were rubbing my back, and they were saying kind things to me. And I was babbling about how I'd forgotten where home was. I'd blown it up, and I didn't know how you could go home for the holidays when you didn't even know where it was. And Linda took my face in both her hands and said, "Friend, home is anywhere you are loved, and you are loved here." Well, because I had blown the mood to pieces with my little freakout, and because it was late, which by small-town Mormon standards turns out to be 7:15 p.m., they decided to call it a night. We all adjourned to Raymond and Linda's house. We gathered around this great long table, and I sat there looking around at all the little trappings of a life. You had pictures of the kids and Christmas decorations everywhere. And because they were good, kind people, of course they served snacks. And because they were alarmingly Norman Rockwell, of course the snacks were milk and gingerbread cookies. I didn't know it at the time, but that is as close as I was going to get to Christmas dinner that year. I hate milk. 2 bites of a gingerbread cookie will send me into a state of gastric distress that is absolutely alarming for me and anyone in the nearby vicinity. But from those good, kind people that year, I learned that Christmas dinner is not a function of the date or even the food. Christmas dinner, it turned out, is a function of the season, the place, the people, and the warmth and the kindness they give you. And that is why that humble and gastrically challenging meal of milk and gingerbread cookies was and always will be my finest Christmas dinner.
That's Rick Reppy. And I'm glad to welcome Allegra Lingo up to the stage. Allegra, thanks for being here.
Hey, Jeff.
We always like to collect a few notes about people before they come on stage. Sister, you've got a favorite Christmas tune. What is it?
I do. My favorite Christmas tune ever is Sleigh Ride.
Sleigh Ride.
Mm-hmm. It's got everything you need. It's got jingle bells. Yeah. Exactly. There we go. We got jingle bells. We have a horse whinny and a whip crack. I mean, that's all you need, right?
Do you remember when you first heard the song?
I was probably pretty little, but then when I was in high school, my band director made us play it at every single Christmas concert. Mm-hmm. But he would never let us practice it until the first snowfall of the year. So whether that was, you know, the day after the concert or what have you, that's how much we saw it.
So it's associated very much with kind of a nice memory.
Absolutely,
I suppose, for snowfall of the year. Well, thanks for being here for the Story Slam, taking on our theme tonight, festive indigestion.
My mother's family is Danish. We are descendants of the Vikings, but we are also the home of existential philosophy. My father's family, on the other hand, is Welsh, which means that side descends from singing coal miners who have repeatedly voted against independence in Great Britain. This genetically boils down to a competition between warriors who will conquer and pillage everything but don't really care, versus the dependent choir boys, and the Danes will win that knife fight every time. Now, in my youth, this familial dichotomy played itself out on Christmas Eve on West 31st Street in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. My grandparents actually lived on the same street, just six houses away from each other. Christmas for my mother's family was a multi-day affair comprised of Baptist church services, sledding, ice skating, and food. My father's family was a bit more simple, but the afternoon of Christmas Eve was always reserved for them. My sister and I would leave the other house and make the trek down the icy sidewalk until reaching the house with the inflatable Santa that has been in every Christmas picture since 1957. My grandpa would emerge from the basement carrying a 5-gallon paint bucket, which contained the stew that he made God knows how long ago, which he trotted out every single time we came over for a meal. There was always something a bit off about the taste, and we never quite knew if it was due to constant thawing and refreezing every couple months, how long the meat had sat out before it had been cooked, or whether the bucket was actually still laced with paint. And when a voice resembling the love child of Eeyore and Dick Cheney, my Grandpa Frank would say grace. Dear Lord, we thank you for this chance to bring the family together and celebrate the birth of your son. I always said he should have been a minister, exclaimed his girlfriend at this point. We'd leave soon after eating and make the journey back and be greeted at the other house with the question, did you actually eat the paint bucket stew again? And be handed two Pepto-Bismols. And then it was time for dinner. The adults gathered at the big table underneath the watchful eye of a crocheted Afghan of the Last Supper. And the cousins would get the kids' table in the kitchen. We enjoyed that mainly because there was no one to make sure we ate all of our oysters or pickled herring, and we could be done in 10 minutes and scamper off to the basement to watch movies and not have to make small talk. And I could sit in my grandpa's lazy boy rocker and read. But we were forced to come upstairs and eat dessert, which every Christmas Eve is prune pie. Prune pie, a Scandinavian tradition that apparently only my family participates in, which is made up of a cold pie crust, cold stewed prunes, and cold whipped cream. Three distinct layers to be prepared, eaten, and pooped several hours later. You know, the overriding symbol of family togetherness at our house was watching snowfall reflected in the light of the street lamp as we all waited in line for one of the two bathrooms at 3 a.m. You know, we are no longer the invincible Vikings. On my mother's side, I've lost an aunt to cancer, a grandpa to being old, and a cousin in a car crash the last 5 years. They were the life, the linchpin, and the black sheep of the family, which is really the three reasons why you go to holidays. Now, for other reasons, a few more seats are now empty, Both houses have been sold. The youngest amongst us is my 22-year-old sister, so there's no need for Santa, for paint bucket stew, or sledding, or ice skating. There's no need for a kid's table, but now we watch the two grandparents in their mid-80s eat as fast as they can before running off without having to make small talk. Grandpa Frank to the couch to watch TV, and my grandma to my grandfather's lazy blue chair to read, which now sits in my living room. You know, this year I'll set out the card table with the prune pie ever-present and a stack of plates for the ones that are no longer with us. And I hope they show up, because it really doesn't feel right to be the only one in line for the bathroom at 3 o'clock in the morning, watching the snowfall reflected in the light of the street lamp.
Thank you, Allegra Lingo. I'm Jeff Horwich. It's the Story Slam from In the Loop. We're here at the Lab Theater in Minneapolis. We got the smarts back here handling the music. Dave Mondy, a Story Slam stalwart. Glad to see you back.
Yes, it's good to see you. We're wearing similar colored jackets.
We
That's
are.
A horrible thing to say for the radio, isn't it?
I don't know how people would tell us apart.
Yeah.
That's why.
Only your excessive charm.
Could be that your microphone is up about a foot and a half taller than mine, maybe. We often hear about your, in previous stories, we've heard about your adventures in the restaurant industry. You're working at a fondue restaurant right
yes,
now?
Yes, that's right. Yes. And you know, you've got to make cheese to make cheese, Jeff.
I suppose so. What are your duties at the fondue restaurant? Is it harder work, easier work?
I do make cheese. Yeah. I tell people how to boil their meat. It's not a double entendre. I just tell them how to boil their meat, make drinks, all sorts of things. Huh. It's actually a really good job. I just, you know.
Does it stack up rather well against your other food industry jobs you've had in the past?
Money's better, joy is less, which seems like a reasonable sort of equation.
Yeah, for the money. What is it about fondue that just sucks the joy out of it?
I don't know. I mean, I think the people love it. I think they're happy in an inverse relationship to my happiness.
As it often works when you're on the other side of that equation,
yeah,
I suppose. The happier the customer, the more surly you are bringing them their cheese. Dave, glad to have you back on the Story Slam. Our theme tonight, festive indigestion. Have at it.
The thing about Jesus that no one will tell you, the thing that no one ever really talks about, is that he really wasn't a very good carpenter. All the other guys on the job site would only give Jesus the really easy stuff, like the stuff he couldn't screw up. Like, you never let Jesus work on anything structural or load-bearing. And the worst part was, is Jesus thought he was a really good carpenter. You know, being the Son of God, he just assumed he was good at everything, but he was human too, which meant that, like all of us, there are naturally some things he wasn't good at, like carpentry. And the worst part was he had to pretend with him because, you know, Jesus was really sensitive. I mean, he could be tough, definitely, like the real boxer, poet, revolutionary type, but there are definitely times where his eyes would get real big and wet and trembling, and you could just tell he was carrying so much weight. But it really sucked when he offered to fix something at your place. You'd have him over, you'd be hanging out, talking philosophy and theology. I mean, Jesus was pretty much the smartest guy I ever met. But then he'd get up to get a glass of wine, and he'd say, "You know, these cabinets, pretty old. Would you allow me the pleasure of making you some new ones?" You'd have to pretend to be all excited, like, "Oh, thank you, Jesus." And he'd be all magnanimous and wouldn't accept payment. And then the moment he was out of sight, you'd call a real carpenter and you'd say, "Look, I want to keep this quiet, but Jesus was just here." And they'd cut you off right away and say, "Look, just don't use them. We'll be over immediately." And it was true, too. You did not want to use those cabinets. I'll never forget Thomas waking up in the middle of the night to all his coffee cups crashing to the floor. The look on his face, it told the whole story, just full of doubt. Like he was thinking, "I just can't believe Jesus made such crappy cabinets." It's weird how big he got with the crowds and everything and the miracles. I mean, once he really got going, a lot of those more human things just kind of dropped right out of his personality. But those are the things that really make you miss him the most, you know? Like, there's this girl he liked, and he made her this chair. It's really beautiful in this amazing way. Like, it was both ornate and sparse at the same time. I can't really describe it, but she loved it and made a big show of sitting down on it. But when she did, it just kind of fell apart. And at first, Jesus was yelling at her like she'd sat on it wrong or something. Like she'd done some violent cannonball sit-down or something, which, you know, she obviously hadn't. And then you could just see this look come over his face like, oh, my God, I'm not a very good... And he apologized to her. And he took her face in his hands like he was going to kiss her. And she wanted him to, and you could tell he wanted to. But then he just turned away. Like, I don't know. And she held his head to her chest for a while, and he started crying. Like, he was just crying, comforted. You could tell he really needed that comfort. But he wouldn't allow himself it that long, and he just broke away and picked up the pieces of the chair and apologized real formally all of a sudden, real weird, and walked away with her calling after him. I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm getting all emotional now in this part. It's just, I guess I think about him a lot this time of year. I try to pretend it doesn't bother me, but they didn't have to, you know, do that to him, what they did. I know he was stirring up trouble, but at the very least, he was the kind of guy we needed more of, not less, you know? And now you've got the disciples and the disciples' disciples, and they mean well, but they make me pretty nervous, I'm not going to lie. They seem to treat Jesus more as a symbol or a force rather than just a guy, you know? I don't know. See that paper towel holder over there? Jesus made that way back when. I mean, the thing works for crap as a paper towel holder, but the dowel's way too thick, for one. But I can't seem to throw it away. I don't know. I guess some people write books to remember him. Me, I've just got this crappy paper towel holder.
Dave Mondy. This is the Story Slam from In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. And as we make our way through the show each and every time, of course, we like to mix it up with a little bit of new music on the theme. And I've been thinking about festive indigestion and the kinds of things that make us nervous and uncertain this time of year. And of course, I've been thinking about shopping and resolutions and resolutions to do less shopping. And so here's a little tune about that. This year, Christmas is gonna be small. Ain't got the money to go to the mall. Hit January walking tall. Every year I start with the same ambition. Tried to spend less, start a new tradition. Tone it down anyway, that's my vision. But every year I fall.
Gotta chill out so you can totally do this.
Stick to my guns, you know I can get through this.
Try not to think about the other times that you blew this.
All the years I tried.
Hey, don't you know it's not about how much you spend.
I set the rules, but every year I have to bend. Oh,
and how does that make you feel in the end?
Honestly, not as bad as I should. I know I need to cut back, I do. But what will my wife think when I don't come through? And just what kind of husband would I be if I don't love her at least as much as she loves me? Found my mom the perfect gift outside my budget just a bit. If I close my eyes and charge it, I can budget, make it fit. See the look that she'll have. She gets to open it, but now I'm headed down the wrong path.
You gotta buck the system and the mindset that feeds it.
But don't you think that the economy needs it?
Commercialism grabs it through your wallet and bleeds it.
Oh, the country needs me to spend.
You make a good point as a matter of fact.
Hey, ain't you all the folks that should be holding me back?
Stingy people like you have got the country on track.
Hey, well that's just not very nice. I could give my dough to those out there who need my help. I'd feel so good about myself. And I could say to you, I make good on my promise to scale back. But let's be honest, now that Christmas is upon us, can you follow through? This year, Christmas is gonna be small. Ain't got the money to go to the mall. Heat January walking tall. Yes, every year I start with the same ambition. Try to spend less, start a new tradition. Tone it down anyway, that's my vision. But every year I fall. It only takes a little discipline, I know. I am a soul weak, so meek beneath the storefront's glow. Rather than waiting and deliberating, there's never debating. I'm a sucker for the opening and anticipating. I set my limit, but I never stay within it. Can't stop, I ease up, no cojones to begin it. It's a war against tradition, and someday I'm gonna win it. But for now, I just can't scale back. All right, thank you very much. The Smarts backing me up there. Thanks, guys. I'm Jeff Horwich. It's the Story Slam from In the Loop. Whether it's family, whether it's food, whether it's the economy, we set a theme tonight of festive indigestion, all those things that can make our stomachs churn this time of year. Well, it's my pleasure to welcome Cece Cooper to the Story Slam. Cece, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, Cece's a stand-up comedian here in the Twin Cities.
Yes, I am.
And you actually performed at an event that the Smarts and I did.
Yes,
and,
I did.
And I thought, boy, we should ask you to come on out and
tell
a story
for us. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Well, very glad to have you here.
Yeah.
Now, you've got also a cable access show here in the Twin Cities. Tell me about it.
Yes, I do. It's called Cece's Blog in the Northwest Community, and it's just my blog. I just get on there and talk about what normal people talk about on their blogs, but I'm just too lazy to type, so it's easier to videotape.
I see. It's normally a blog, of course, is on a computer, but this is...
Exactly.
Is it just sort of stream of consciousness, whatever you would be writing on a
blog?
Exactly. You're saying to whoever's
exactly.
tuning in?
So I don't get to do the backspace, delete, delete. You see everything.
What you get is what you get.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a sense of who's out there watching? Do you hear from people?
Oh, all the time. I actually get recognized in the grocery store a lot, and people call up and leave messages on the comment line.
All right. Cece Cooper on the In the Loop Story
Slam. Okay. You're too kind. Okay, so I just want to share with you guys, it's the holiday season, and of course, nobody loves the holiday more than I do. But when it comes to misadventures during the holiday, I would have to say I am like the poster child. Let me take you back to New Year's Eve when I was 16 years old. Me and my boyfriend figured that the most sassy thing that we could do for New Year's Eve was to spend it in... at Times Square. Now, I grew up in the Catskills in New York, so we were going to drive down to spend New Year's Eve in Times Square. My baby sister, who was a year younger than me, and her boyfriend decided to tag along. On the way, we had car trouble. So by the time we got it all worked out, we're in this little small town called Goshen, and it's like 20 minutes to midnight, and we still have a 45-minute ride ahead of us. Thank God for math class. We knew we weren't going to make it to the city. So we decided to find a bar in that town to bring in New Year's Eve. Now, keep in mind, this was in the 70s when you did not need an ID to drink in a bar. All you needed was two things, to be breathing and have money. So... we find this little bar in this little town called Seniors, and we're thinking, oh, fabulous, we'll bring in the holiday Spanish style, dance some merengue, do some salsa, only to discover when we walked in the bar, we collectively realized that the name of the bar was actually Seniors. Yes. Here we were, these little teenagers, and we walked into a bar full of senior citizens. And if you've never partied with a bunch of drunk senior citizens, woo! Let me tell you, okay? And especially when they get real surly and start talking about things that happened 30 years ago as if it happened 10 minutes ago and you were part of it, okay? We didn't know about Alzheimer's back then. We just thought they were 10 miles north of crazy. But, anyway, fast forward when I was an adult, and I got to spend one of my favorite New Year's Eve in front of the fireplace with the man of my dreams doing very adult things. And at one point, he whispers in my ear what every woman wants to hear, "Baby, I'm on fire." Now, that's what I heard him say, but what he actually said was, "I'm on fire!" We don't know exactly how it happened. Maybe his leg hung over the couch and hit a candle, but his pant leg actually started to burn. So that will explain to most people why in my personal ad, when it asks what I look for in a man, I say preferably non-flammable. So And there was a lot of mishaps that I've had over the years, like the time I accidentally spent it with my arch enemy's family, or the time that my brothers and sisters referred to, 'twas the night I killed Santa. Don't worry, he wasn't the real Santa. But I'd have to say one of my most memorable fiascos was last Christmas, and it was kind of the first time I actually took to pen and wrote a poem about what happened to me last Christmas, which I will share with you guys right now. 'Twas the day after Christmas, and I thought to myself, what was up with Santa and his faithful elves? My stockings were hung by the chimney with care, but when I looked inside, there was nothing in there. So I went to look under my Christmas tree. Surely there'd be presents under there for me. But when I looked, I couldn't believe my eyes, for it too was empty, much to my surprise. I couldn't figure out what was the matter. Come to think of it, I never did hear Santa's clatter. So I tried to deal with it as best I could, and that's when I realized, oh, crap, I forgot to be good. Hey, my name is Cece. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Cece Cooper. This is the In the Loop Story Slam, our theme tonight, Festive Indigestion. And I'm very glad to have on stage with me now, Hi Berman, professor at the University of Minnesota. He's about to shake my hand, so I will shake it with kind of a, well, that's a groovy handshake we pulled off there, wasn't it? Hi. Professor of History at the U of M, since forever, it says here. Do you remember when forever began?
Oh, yeah, since forever.
Okay, well, we'll just leave it at that. Yeah. I remember interviewing you one time, maybe a couple times as a journalist. You're such an authority on the history of this area, and it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, of course, you know, I've been interviewed by so many journalists, I've forgotten what they look like.
Oh, I don't expect you to remember me. I'm rather forgettable.
Oh.
But it's a pleasure to have you here in kind of a very different format.
Well, it's very much of a pleasure for me to be here, although I've never been a stand-up comedian, although my students thought I was.
Unintentionally sometimes.
Oh, of course.
Oh, okay. Well, we're glad to have you with us. I'll leave you to your story. Welcome to the Story Slam. Hi, Berman.
I've had a very, very fortunate existence here at the University of Minnesota and here in the Twin Cities. And one of the fortunate parts of it is that I've traveled all over the world as a visiting professor all over the world. And I've had very remarkable experiences, particularly with food. And I was trained with strange food. My mother was a lousy cook. And what she cooked was typical Jewish food. And those of you who have ever eaten Jewish food know that it's hard on the stomach. So hard on the stomach that you can't really survive sometimes. In 1981, I was invited to go to the People's Republic of China to open up U.S. history again for the first time after the end of the Cultural Revolution. And I spent 5 months there trying to reintroduce the Chinese scholars to American history. One of the byproducts of that was that I was taken all over the country. And I gave lectures all over the country and was given food all over the country. Food was magnificent. Chinese cuisine is magnificent. But I never asked them what I was eating. One time in Shanghai, someone told me, "Did you like the dog?" I said, "I don't see a dog." They said, "Did you like the dog you ate?" I said, "What? Dogs, cats, monkeys' brains, all of these, of course, were part of the cuisine that was fed me without my knowing it." A few years later, I was in Poland, and I was invited by one of my colleagues to come to dinner at his house. When I came to his house and sat down to eat, the first thing I discovered was, my God, this is the same kind of food that my mother served me. How could this be? Then I discovered that, yes, although my mother cooked Jewish food was really Polish food made kosher. I couldn't believe my eyes, but most importantly, I couldn't believe my stomach. I had terminal indigestion for the next 3 days. I was really surprised this morning when I opened up the New York Times and saw that in Paris, a Jewish restaurant was going to get Michelin stars. How could that be? Then I read what they were cooking there and the menus that they were serving. That wasn't what my mother made. Sure, they said they were going to give something called gefilte fish. But when they described what it was and how it was being prepared, it was something out of this world. It was French, not Jewish. Then they described a kugel. Those of you who have ever had kugel know that you've had it, because it stays with you for 5 days. And they described it in the New York Times article, and it was real Michelin quality stuff. Where have I been all my life? I've been eating Jewish food, but then my mother was not a Michelin cook. It was always festive in my house, and I always had indigestion.
Thank you so much. Hi, Bourbon. All right, that's the smarts coloring tastefully between the stories here on the Story Slam. Here at the Lab Theater in Minneapolis, and glad to have with us on the stage now the 2008 Minneapolis Poetry Slam champion. His name is Kyle Myrie, goes by El Guante. El Guante, welcome to the Story Slam.
Thank you.
I've got a note here about a recent project you're working on at the moment, organizing a show called Hip Hop Against Homophobia. Tell me a little about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a rapper as well as a poet, and I've also been a social justice activist for a long time, and with the Prop 8 thing in California going on, and there's going to be a lot more actions coming up, we just thought it might be a good thing to bring communities together. A lot of what I do as a multidisciplinary like artist is bringing communities, whether that be the hip-hop community, the spoken word community, the theater community, the activist community, all these different groups of people, bringing them together and hopefully having some synergy there.
Well, thanks for bringing your talents here to our holiday Story Slam. I hope you have a good holiday yourself, and I'll let you take it away. El Guante, our theme tonight, thanks. Festive indigestion.
This piece is called Joy in 5 parts. 1, she can't help but think that heartburn should refer to something a little more grand or melodramatic. Taking two of the most expressive words in the English language, heart and burn, and smashing them together should give you something larger than this. 3 a.m. It's technically December 26th. Technically, the time for Christmas miracles is past, but she doesn't fully understand all the winter holidays of other cultures, so she thinks that maybe one of them might still be working. Her own little unorganized religion, a mixture of Catholicism, Bruce Lee quotes, weed, and Oprah, doesn't have a proper deity, just the vague feeling that, well, there's got to be something more than this. So she finds herself praying to whomever might be listening, like, please, don't let me be out of vinegar. Or, if my car starts today, I promise I'll be a better person. Or, I'm sorry. There's no one to wake up, so her footsteps are heavy and she turns every light on, too. A New Year's resolution is a kind of prayer. A request for strength, a vow to action, a rebirth. She always thought it was funny that the most popular resolutions were things like, I'm going to eat better this year, or I'm going to get that promotion, and not things like, if I should die this year, the world will weep torrential downpours in even the harshest deserts, and the sun will fly at half mast while the moon gets drunk and disappears for a week. Songs sung in my honor will erupt spontaneously from the mouths of newborns. If I should die this year, I swear you will remember me. Not in the way you remember your first kiss or a near-death experience, but in a way that the ocean remembers the wind, or the way that ghosts remember who they once were. Her New Year's resolution is something along those lines. though she knows she won't keep it. Her sternum is an island in a sea of acid. You're only allowed one resolution every year. She considers trading hers for, I'm going to find the damn vinegar and go back to sleep. Three, to have heartburn now, on top of everything else. It's like your basement flooding a week before the world ends. It's like an undercooked last meal. It's like being punched in the face while sitting up in a hospital bed. It's like tearing your ACL in the final minute of a game. You're losing by 40 points. It's like finding out your nice shoes don't fit anymore, so you can't go to the party you weren't invited to anyway. It's like raindrops on your casket. It's like the cable going out during your first Christmas alone. 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar stirred into a half cup water. She'd rather have a Tums, but Walmart is 4 miles away and she's running low on gas as it is. Hell, she'd rather have a doctor, but who can afford health insurance these days? She drinks the vinegar and stares out the small kitchen window. The neighbor's Christmas lights hanging awkwardly off her reflection, a giant glowing snowman for a neck. 4. She remembers speeding away from the hospital, still raw. She passed by an elementary school recess and cried out the window, Santa Claus isn't real. 5. The happiest times are when we feel our greatest sorrows most profoundly. No year is ever really new, just recycled bits of history mashed together and painted over, dropped in Times Square while beautiful people kiss one another. Still, it's supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be happy during the coldest, darkest 2 weeks of the year. Cinnamon candles and Charlie Brown Christmas special music. Dinner with the family. Peanut butter cups shaped like trees. Part of her is thankful for the heartburn. Feelings are easier than emotions. And right now, easy isn't necessarily a bad thing. Besides, happiness is a long way from joy. Still staring outside, she flips the light off. Her reflection disappears. But in its place, she sees the silhouette of her young neighbor walking home, perhaps after a holiday party. He lurches through the sidewalk's unshoveled snow from the day before and emerges into his own driveway, where he promptly slips on the ice and crashes to the ground. And despite herself, she smiles.
Slam poet, champion, El Guante, the glove. Thank you. This is a Story Slam from In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. Our house band, as always, the Smarts. And as always, we ask them to take a run at our theme as well. A little bit of musical stimulation on this theme of festive indigestion. We'll let Jimmy Kennedy, our keyboard player, take the opening vocals here.
Got my shopping done, I got my stockings hung, gotta get some fun and lovely invitations. I gotta pick a tree, better yet get 3, so my friends can see my many decorations. Celebrating celebration, ornaments from far off nations. Just can't get enough of Christmas cards addressed. Got my red shirt pressed, gotta look my best. It's time to light a Yule log. Listen all day long to my Christmas songs.
Christmas song.
Put another on, I've got more things to pick up. Extra nutmeg for my eggnog. Costume for a small dog. Just can't get enough of Christmas time. Popcorn on a string,
hear the sleigh bells ring. Hang a mistletoe, stir the cookie dough. When this time of year draws near,
I gotta hit the malls, I'll deck my halls, cover up my walls with wreaths and holly berries. Want to string some lights, make them extra bright. What a lovely sight, a glowing Virgin Mary. Now I'm feeling extra merry for another Tom and Jerry. Just can't get enough of Christmas time. Just can't get enough of Christmas time. Just can't get enough of Christmas time. Just can't get enough of Christmas time.
Have a little peanut brittle.
Just can't get enough of Christmas time.
Turkey dressing, say the blessing.
Just can't get enough of Christmas time.
Like a scene from L.L. Bean.
Just can't get enough of Christmas time.
Now I found I'm gaining pounds, but
just can't get enough of Christmas time.
Opening gifts and family rips, I
just can't get enough of Christmas time.
Kind of foolish, 'cause I'm Jewish.
Just can't get enough of Christmas time.
The Smarts.
Thank you very much. The Smarts, Jimmy Kennedy on keys, Joe Weissman on bass, Morris Engel on drums. All of them singing there. More about them at thesmartsband.com. I'm Jeff Horwich, host of In the Loop, here at the Lab Theater in Minneapolis. Next on stage with me, Craig Peterson, software developer, rugby player, and uber geek. It says on my page here. Which of those would you like to talk about most, Craig?
How about the rugby player thing?
Okay, tell me about rugby.
I like play for a club called Metropolis, a merger of Metro and Minneapolis, and we have a lot of fun off the name. We call ourselves the Men of Steel Rugby Players. I was given the nickname Gorilla by the club. In my first match, they tease me that my knuckles drag on the ground when I run, and hence the name.
Is that a bad thing in rugby?
No, it works out okay.
Yeah, it's a term of endearment, isn't it?
Exactly.
So is it as rough as it looks? I mean, have you lost teeth? Had your nose broken, that kind of stuff?
No, it looks like I've broken my nose, but I just got that from my mother, not from rugby.
Not playing rugby with your mother?
No.
Oh, okay. Did the people at your software development job where you're working, it says you're writing Java code, know about your gorilla side?
Yes, I tell them some stories. I was given a gorilla suit by some of my teammates, and we've had ample opportunity to make use of that as well.
Well, Craig, you're a newcomer to our Story Slam. I'm glad that you came out to join us tonight. Let's hear what you got on our theme, Festive Indigestion. Craig
Thank
Peterson.
You. Let's see if you can clean your plate before Mom comes back upstairs, my sister challenged. I glanced at the scalloped potatoes in front of me, and then to the TV in the next room. The Charlie Brown special would start any minute. No clean plate, no TV. I could hear Mom in the basement emptying the dryer. I swallowed hard, forcing down another bite, but still had several forkfuls left. Trying to mask the foul taste, I took gulps of milk with each small bite. Yes, I realize that a bland vegetable cooked in a cream sauce prepared by a home ec major hardly counts as horrid food. It was a matter of principle. I had scrunched my nose when Mom mentioned scalloped potatoes were on the menu. I was duty-bound to make a fuss over eating them. The buttons of the clean, wet shirts clanked against the dryer drum as Mom transferred them. I could hear water running to fill the washer for the next load. Still some time to meet the challenge. Still too many potatoes to hide under my silverware. Nibble. Gulp. She's almost done. Hurry, whispered my sister. Bite. Gulp. It's on, from my brother in the next room, turning up the volume to make sure we could hear. Bigger bite. Gulp. Click from the laundry room light switch as the room went dark. Creak, creak from the stairs as my mom started up with the dry clothes. "Hurry," coaxed my sister. "You can do it." Last bite, last gulp, as mom reached the top of the stairs. Clean plate, but only for a moment. Too much, too fast. Milk and potatoes everywhere. My brother was the only one allowed to watch Charlie Brown that night.
Thank you so much, Craig Peterson. Next up on the stage of the Story Slam with me, Rob Callahan. Rob, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Now, you're sort of my hero here because I'm thinking about this myself, or at least what to do with my tiny house now that I've got a new son. You bought a house recently, despite the economy being the way
yeah,
it is.
Just on Monday, actually.
No kidding.
Last night was the first night I spent there.
No, we get, so. That's enough to get applause yeah. in this day and age. Well, we're talking about the holidays and all the things that maybe make us nervous or unsettled around this time of year. And certainly the economy this year is a big one. Did you have any second thoughts about going through that process?
No, I think it actually helped me because prices have come down to a point that I can afford. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, we're glad to have you out here on the Story Slam. Very nice to meet you. It's your first time here, I think.
It is.
All right. Well, show us what you got. Rob Callahan.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you. The Paul Revere Mobile Manor was the kind of place that the cops wouldn't go after dark, which on December 24th is most of the day. And Mom kept that kind of thing in mind when she was out selecting the quote-unquote uncles who were going to come and live with us. Uncle Roy Bauer was no exception to that rule. The man kept a gun cabinet in every room of the house. When the kids were misbehaving, he'd look at us, look quietly over at his gun cabinet, and then just sit there quietly, as if to let us know that's what we were asking for. And as Christmas loomed nearer and nearer, he didn't look to the gun cabinets. Instead, he looked to the ceiling, as if to let us know, you know, trailers have no chimneys. And it's going to be hard enough for Santa to get here as it is. If you're naughty, he might just consider this not worth the effort and pass us by. As if the lack of chimney wasn't enough, there was also the Christmas treats we left out for him. Now, Mom's cookies were, she made her cookies like Cajuns make catfish, blackened. And they were like these little miniature hockey pucks, only not quite as chewy. In fact, one time I had a loose tooth, and to get rid of it, she baked me up some cookies and fed them to me, and as soon as the tooth hit that more charcoal than cookie thing, out it came. On top of that, there was the powdered milk, which, when mixed with water, really created a sort of substance that was more like a glass of watered-down mashed potatoes, kind of a white, soupy, lumpy, we'll just leave it at that, watered-down mashed potatoes. It was more like that than milk. And Santa had those two things really deterring him from coming to our trailer. No chimney. Really bad food he's going to have to eat. And on top of that, I didn't know if I'd been nice enough, and these things kept me awake all night in bed, staring up at that darkened ceiling, wondering if he was going to show. And about 3 a.m., I heard the screen door open, and I heard someone trying the doorknob, and I knew it was him. So I jumped out of bed, ran down that narrow hall down to the living room, and waited to get my glimpse of him. By the time I got to the living room, he'd realized the door was locked, so he'd started kicking, trying to work on that deadbolt. And I could see the frame cracking and splintering right around where the deadbolt was, and I knew with just a couple of more kicks I was going to get to see Santa. But Uncle Roy didn't let that happen. He came barreling down the hall in his flannel pajamas with his .308, and he blasted a hole in that door big enough to put your fist through. He didn't stop there either. He kept going, tore the door open, and ran out after him. Now, as he ran out, I caught just a little bit of a glimpse of Santa, and I got to tell you, he was not jolly, he was not old, he was not plump. He looked a lot like one of the skinny teenagers who lived down the street. And by that time, the whole family was up, and we huddled around in the living room listening to the occasional gunshot breaking through the silent night. Until Uncle Roy came back looking disappointed. And we looked up at him with big, sad eyes as if to ask, "Did you do it? Did you really kill Santa?" And Roy just shook his head and said, "Well, he got away." Now, over the years, the rest of my friends outgrew their belief in Santa Claus. They outgrew their belief in Christmas and the Christmas miracle, but not me. Because every time I chipped my tooth on one of Mom's cookies, I was brought back to that night, December 25th, 1983, when I saw with my own eyes, and I'll tell you, he didn't look like he would in a storybook or in a Coke ad. It was a night that I didn't get any toys, but I got the best present of all, seeing with my own eyes the fact that he was there. And that's why to this day I know Santa really does exist. Thank you.
Very festive. Thank you, Rob Callahan. If you would, this wonderful audience we have here at the Lab Theater, one more round of applause for all of our storytellers tonight. Well, as always, the Story Slam is produced by Melissa LaCase with help from Alan Freckman and In the Loop's trusted producer, Sandon Totten. Minnesota Public Radio's director of live events is Tony Bowl. Thanks to Mary Lear, K.O. Campbell, and the staff of the Lab Theater here in Minneapolis. We had a great time. I hope we'll be back. Thanks to Anna Weglin, Srini Radhakrishna for some extra help tonight. Our engineers for this show, Chris Heagle, Johnny Vince Evans, and Cam Wiley. The Smarts are Jimmy Kennedy, Joe Weissman, and Morris Engel. Visit them at thesmartsband.com. Get involved with In the Loop. Podcast the show at minnesotapublicradio.org. Listen for our regular weekly program every Friday night at 6. I'm Jeff Horwich, and I hope your holidays are a whole lot of festive, maybe just a little indigestion. We'll see you online, on the radio, and, of course, at the next Story Slam. Thanks, everybody.